Good evening, everyone. So during this second period, I'm going to offer a little talk about Buddha, it being Buddha's Eve, the eve of Buddha's birth. It seems an important moment to recognize. And so I spent some time reflecting today on the life of Buddha, and much of it, most of you already know, so I won't spend a long time talking about his life, but I do want to highlight a few moments and maybe a few things that you didn't know, a few things you hadn't heard before, and share a few thoughts about that. So, of course, the story goes that Buddha's mother, who was named Maya, was visited in a dream by a white elephant who offered her a lotus flower, then entered her side, and 10 months later, Buddha was born, Siddhartha. And she stood under a tree which dipped its limb to hold her as she leaned against it, and stood and gave birth to this Buddha, who was fortune tellers of a sort, prognosticators, predicted that he would be a great ruler, that he would either be a great spiritual teacher or a kind of king of sorts. And as many of you know, his father sheltered him for a long time, hoping that he would not experience suffering and that therefore he would go on to live a life of a king rather than to have great compassion and develop in the line of a spiritual teacher. But Buddha eventually did encounter suffering, the type of suffering that we discuss in our five remembrances. He witnessed old age, he witnessed sickness and death inevitably, and realized that he wanted to save people from suffering. And so he left the sheltered palace walls, which of course never did separate him from suffering in the first place. This was a fantasy, and of course is one of the most important teachings, that we all encounter suffering and that we all suffer. This first noble truth does not become less true, even as the fourth noble truth, that there is a way to alleviate suffering, is true. These two coexist, each dependent on the other. We suffer and we find ways to alleviate it. So Buddha went and practiced as an ascetic for 6 years. And when he was near death, living on a grain of rice a day, a woman approached him. And I think that she's very important. Her name was Sujata. She approached him and fed him. She offered him rice and milk, and he was nourished. What an observant person, this person walking by, this woman, under-celebrated and not well enough known in my view, who saw him. She didn't walk by him and think, oh, there's some homeless dude starving. I think I'll walk right on by. But she actually saw him and offered what she had. And this is a redeeming moment for Buddha, with a newfound strength, having abandoned this ascetic practice and joined in a middle way, we say, neither indulging nor rejecting. Similar to how we experience our emotions and our thoughts as we practice meditation. He sat under the Bodhi tree. And as he sat, he was tempted and seduced by Mara, this demon who shows up in all of our minds in many, many different forms. Each of us, it's different. For some of us, it may come as a great swaggering, egotistical pride. And for others, it may come as self-doubt and anxiety and sadness and grief and anger and depression. And we meet these different forces in our minds. And Buddha responded with the middle path, neither embracing nor rejecting, simply saying, I see you, Mara, I see you, bearing witness to things just as they are, the path of practice, spelled out for us in our tradition. So simple. And through this, he was awakened. This great gift, this accident that comes along, we set the conditions, we make ourselves accident prone. And this great accident of awakening with the morning star, the Buddha recognizes his interconnectedness, his interwovenness with all of creation, and says, hyphenated, I, together with all beings, am awake. This is not a solipsistic I. This is the interpenetrated, co-created vastness of existence. Am awake. Each star shining forth in its thusness with its unique twinkle, awake. The expression of nervous faces of passers-by, awakening. Every single being in existence, a manifestation of awakening. Not his awakening, not their awakening, just awakening. Enlightenment, that which pervades the entire universe, not something that any particular person possesses, and thus available to each and every one of us in every moment. Attention, attention, attention. The Buddha lived a long life after this of teaching and shared this practice through the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Noble Path, this middle way of neither clinging nor pushing away, manifested also through the precepts, right action, right thought, right speech, all these things that are woven into our precepts, the Eightfold Noble Path. And we find he lived a long life, led a Sangha for some 40 plus years, and it wasn't always easy. People imagine that Buddha's life, because he was enlightened, he must not have suffered. But when he stepped on a thorn, he cried out in excruciating pain. He had Sangha members who betrayed the Sangha, betrayed him, left him. As he approached death, much of his Sangha had scattered. Fairly few remained. And of course, the tradition lived on beyond him. But it's important to realize that his life wasn't all easy. And now I come to a part of the story that I want to focus on. His mother. Buddha's mother was named Maya, as I mentioned. And we know the story of her birth as I told it. But there are two other stories about her that many people don't know. One is that when Buddha was an ascetic and was starving, it is said that his mother showed up. Now, she died 7 days after his birth. How did she show up in the midst of his life? And cried with him, cried for him, feared his death. And he was touched and moved by this. And he tried to comfort her. Might this have been Sujata, who offered him a bowl of rice? The universe reaching out to us in each moment, making offerings. His mother also, according to one legend, showed up at the other bookend of his life. The Buddha had died, and everybody had left. Even the last person to supposedly have seen him, Mahakashapa, had left. And his mother showed up. And Buddha sat up, and they embraced. Alive or dead, the koan goes. The teacher responds, I won't say, I won't say. A deeply important part of our practice as Zen practitioners is recognizing thoughts as thoughts. We often feel like we know the difference between life and death. We often think we know which one we are and which one we are not. What is the great matter of birth and death? Here we sit together, practice together on the eve of Buddha's birth. But wasn't Buddha always with us? Where has Buddha gone? Isn't Buddha with us still? What is a Buddha? I've referred to Thich Nhat Hanh's discussions of these matters before. Thich Nhat Hanh says that some of the ideas that we need to let go of include things like life and death and lifespan, in order that we can truly awaken. And he offers techniques, right? These are just bridges. They're not the truth itself. But these bridges, for example, where does a person go when they die? We might imagine that the person is alive and then is dead. We might imagine that water disappears when it just moves into the sky and falls again as rain. We might imagine that there is a difference between a living body and a dead body. But isn't that dead body teeming with life and giving birth to new life, even from the ground? Do you know they make there's a new way that you can be buried now. You can be put into like a pod of a tree, and the roots of the tree grow through you and take nourishment from you. And you find that your own body is drawn up into the tree of life, springs forth in the spring, forms flowers. As you know, Whitman, what is the grass but the long uncut hair of graves? This notion that we have this firm delineation. But if we were not human, and if we were simply looking at, which is impossible to imagine, and we were somehow able to just see life teeming on the planet, we wouldn't necessarily see delineate between life and death in the same way. We might just see change. We might see the earth as an ever-changing set of processes. One thing becoming the next. True of our own bodies. Even our own bodies, all the water, air, cells replaced over the course of a lifetime. We see process, we see change. And yet we identify with particular forms. And that identification is how we come to believe in life and death. And so this invitation in the story of Buddha, of his mother, who is alive after she is, quote unquote, dead, who visits him, who nourishes him. Raises this wonderful question for us. What are birth and death? Of course, you have probably had moments where you have defined the way reality is. I had one earlier today where I was certain about the way that things were. And I was caught up in some frustration. And then, you know, everything goes its own way. Miraculously, all of my convictions were stolen from me. Like falling, like a free fall. I had no idea how things really were anymore. Something that we might resist without practice. But with practice, we get comfortable with the free fall. We get comfortable with the ground being taken from under our feet. We get comfortable with thinking we know what enlightenment is and then having no idea. And thus, awakening again. Not to the way we think things are supposed to be, but to the way that things actually are. Stepping off the 100-foot pole, we fall and we are liberated from the prison that has been containing us. Reborn, fresh and new. Rebirth, not just a possibility, quote, after death, but a possibility in this very moment. The possibility of everything that you believe about yourself, about the world, falling away, falling, no knowing. Who are you? The emperor asks Bodhidharma. I don't know, he responds. The freedom of no longer knowing that I'm right. That someone else is wrong, liberated from my frustration, liberated from my anger, liberated from my self-righteousness. The freedom of no longer knowing what death is. Do I know? I don't know. And suddenly, born again in the freedom of no knowing, I think of our practice as curiosity, of the willingness to stay open to possibility, like Schrodinger's cat. Alive or dead? Alive or dead? Yes. Such possibility in no knowing, in something beyond knowing, recognizing our thoughts as thoughts, letting them be useful where useful, letting them go when they're a prison, when they're causing us suffering. The Eightfold Path. Liberation, possibility, the possibility of rebirth in each and every moment of our lives. And so we sit. We sit upright. And we watch our thoughts. We watch our mind states. We watch certainty, and we watch it come and go. We get familiar with the territory so that we're a little less attached to those hardened places, to those hardened views, so that we can open up and be liberated and meet each moment just as it is. Awakening possible in every moment, whether we're falling through open space or falling deep into a well, the possibility of awakening is there. The possibility of rebirth, the possibility of liberation from the very things that have made us suffer again and again and again. How, we ask? By looking. By looking, how are things in this moment? They are never as we think they are. Just look and see. And so the story of Buddha, whom we celebrate this evening, for whom I've placed an incense stick in the altar. The incense stick burning down, transforming into light, into ash, into smoke, into scent. Is it gone, or is it present? I won't say. Thank you. So I believe that you are all able now to unmute. And if any of you have a thought or a question or something to contribute, I want to invite that for our Dharma dialogue. Now.